rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
On top of the beautiful second day in March, morning, afternoon, whatever it may be to you, I suppose to our listeners in Australia, it's not even the second day of March right now, is it? In any case, welcome. Welcome, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast in the United States. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Broadcasting 24 hours a day on the web at whiterosesociety.org. And also on Live 365, American FM. You can find all the links from TomHartman.com, or you can also find the link to our chat room if you'd like to drop in for one of the finest, most thoughtful, most articulate, most intelligent, and sometimes wacky, irreverent, and downright strange, sorry guys, online chat and gals on the entire internet. It's a beautiful snowy day here in the People's Republic of Vermont. And I know that much of the East Coast got whacked with a snowstorm here just recently. In fact, as I look out the window, it is still snowing. It hasn't been so bad here. It's just a few feet. But Thomas Jefferson is now under about 3 feet of snow, I would guess. So I haven't seen any evidence of our little mouse friend for about a month. But I'm sure he's under there and probably actually very grateful for all that snow protecting him from the mouse. Or from the cat, rather. The cat that wanders by. Our telephone number, by the way, 802-229, excuse me, that's if you're outside the country, 802-229-2288. Inside the country, 866-889-8894. And we have a lot to cover today. In our first hour, I want to get into why is it that white terrorists are called nationalists, while dark-skinned terrorists are called, terrorists. We'll get to that. In the second hour of our program, how governments and corporations have decided that it's okay if we glow in the dark just a little bit. And in the third hour of our program, cigarette lighters, among other things, are now a no-go on airplanes. But guns that can shoot down planes? Hey, you want to own one of them? No problem. Charlton Heston says it's just fine with him. We'll get into those and a few other things. But first, a little bit of a conservative alert.
Condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
As listening to the Reich Wing.
I'm a bigot. I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do. And I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
Yes. Just attack somebody's...
That's right. You're being scared.
Generality. Attack their person. Don't attack their ideas. Just call them names. So this morning, I get a message. You know, I get these weird emails from time to time. And this one, this fellow, Ross Sindelar, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, sent me an email. He had a copy of my article, When Democracy Failed, which I actually read on the air on Randy Rhoads' show yesterday afternoon on Air America Radio. And he says, Winston Churchill once said, common sense is very uncommon. And you, sir, with writing this article, demonstrate that you have no common sense. That is a fact. Oh, really? Well, I don't see any facts here. I'm sorry. What is an opinion is that you are also a fuzzy-thinking, left-wing, bomb-throwing pinhead. This is absolutely brilliant. Yes, indeed. It's just call people names that... Wraps it right up, doesn't it?
Man, with the face of a horse's ass.
Fat conservative.
Republicans.
Well, there we go. See, that's calling people names. It's really not seemly, you know. It's just really not seemly. Speaking of facts, Arnold Schwarzenegger's up to it. Hey, if it works for George... If it works for George III, if it works for, our King George, our third George to govern America, we ought to start calling him George III, you know, because he is the third George to be president. If it works for George III, then let's do it for Republicans everywhere. This from the Associated Press, article by Steve Lawrence. Headline, California Governor Meal Break Video Sickens Labor. A Schwarzenegger administration video packaged like a TV news story. Does this sound familiar? Yes, it is something that the Hitler administration did. Other administrations have done it as well. That is to say, other regimes, other fascistic regimes in other nations. But now it's being done by the Bush administration. And Schwarzenegger says, that's a cool story. That's a cool idea. And so they put together this video, which they've sent out to television stations all across the state of California. At least five TV stations actually ran it verbatim. Another one of these phony news reports, right? With a phony news reporter who's actually a flack for a PR firm standing in front of a camera with a microphone in his or her hand going, and now the news from Sacramento, by the way, you know, like that or whatever. And Democratic Assemblyman Paul Koretz says, if a television station is lazy enough to just take this video and run it, it completely manipulates and skews the story. And as I said, five of them were, that we know of so far. But Rick Royce, the spokesman for the Schwarzenegger administration, says, oh, no, the video's just a news release, you see. He says, we don't think this is political, nor is it propaganda. It's just a news release on an issue that labor unions are completely opposed to. By coincidence, of course. yes. It's promoting regulations, basically, that say, your employer doesn't have to give you a lunch break. Isn't it great? Let's just pass this law. Your employer doesn't have to give you a lunch break. Let's do away with that old break. And, of course, there's no comment in the video. No, it's the Associated Press. There's no comment in the video from anyone opposed to this new regulation. In the, I guess, in the what's good for the goose is good for the gander department, right? Here's where it gets weird. Here's where it gets really weird. You've seen in the news this story about Judge Lefko, this woman, this judge out in Illinois, I believe. Yeah. Who came home and found that her husband and her mother had been shot to death. And the Associated Press article by Don Babwin. A federal judge who was once the target of a failed murder plot by a white supremacist was under marshal's protection Tuesday following the shooting deaths of her husband and 89-year-old mother, and investigators were looking into possible connections to hate groups, among other leads. Why don't we just call these folks terrorists? Well, they're white. An internet search of supremacist discussion forums Tuesday found links of photos to Lefko's husband and daughters, as well as excerpts from Michael Lefko's biography from the website for his law office. Some new postings had articles about the killings with a comment, and this is in all caps, R-O-H-A-W-A, Rohawa, meaning racial holy war. Okay, so when brown-skinned Muslims declare a racial holy war, they're called terrorists. When white-skinned Christians declare a racial holy war, they are called white supremacists. I suppose it's actually more descriptive. And see, that's actually my whole point, because there's another story that juxtaposes with this. A court in Italy has sentenced a member of the left-wing militant group, the Red Brigades, to life in prison. Now, Italy is not at all reluctant. This happened yesterday, by the way. Italy is not at all reluctant to refer to the Red Brigades as a terrorist group. But they're also sometimes referred to as left-wing militants. This is a BBC story, actually. I don't speak Italian, so I don't have the Italian. Anyhow, Cinzia Bonelli received a 20-year prison sentence for her part in the shooting of Massimo D'Antona. Correspondents say the sentences are harsher than expected, as both women had publicly expressed remorse. One got 20 years, the other got life in prison. Mr. D'Antona, a labor ministry consultant, was shot dead on the street near his home in Rome in 1999. This was 6 years ago. Laura Proietti, 32, and 41-year-old Cinzia Bonelli admitted belonging to the extreme left-wing group behind the murder, but since said they had severed ties with the organization. The BBC goes on to note 15 other suspected members of the group are on trial for their alleged involvement in the same crime. The ultra-left Red Brigades terrorized Italy during the 70s and 80s with a wave of attacks and bombings blamed for killing 415 people. Most of their leaders were eventually arrested and sentenced to long prison terms. Now, this group even apparently had targeted Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. We should have probably made this a Berlusconi alert, but he wasn't quite at the center of this. Last year, officials, the police, said they had discovered lists of key officials who were potential targets of the group. So Italy has this terrorist group, the Red Brigades. Germany had the Bader-Meinhof gang. Greece has the November 17 group. There was another group in Germany called the Grey Hand some years ago. There's you know, England has had the IRA. They've somewhat become more respectable. And how do they deal with, and of course Spain has ETA, the Basque separatists. How do they deal with their terrorists in Europe? They say, these people are criminals! France right now is dealing with Algerian terrorists. They're criminals. You use the police, you track them down, you prosecute them for crimes, you put them in jail. And when you arrest them, you charge them with a crime, because they're also human beings and they have rights. Just, you know, they have the right to go to jail if you can prove there's a crime. But the Bush administration, when 9/11 happened, instead of saying, hey, some criminals have attacked us, and Osama bin Laden was not a head of state, he was a criminal. He was the head of an outlaw organization, which we helped set up in Afghanistan to throw out the Soviets. But nonetheless, even though it was our organization, it was an outlaw organization. In fact, he'd been expelled from Saudi Arabia. He'd been expelled from the Sudan. But instead of going after him and saying, okay, there's a criminal out there. We're going to track him down. We're going to find him. We're going to prosecute him. We're going to put him in jail and humiliate him and his group. Instead, Georgie looked at this thing and said, oh, if I declare war, I get more power. War powers increase the power of the president. Karl Rove looks at it. Bob Woodward documents in his book how Rove went down to Texas in 2002. Said, I have the whole plan for your 2004 re-election. This was just before the invasion of Iraq. Yes, indeed, you got to be a war president. I'm not quoting verbatim from Mr. Rove, of course. You've got to be strong. You've got to be resolute. We're going to win this election. And sure enough, well, some say they won it. I'm not convinced, but nonetheless, sure enough, they get a lot of votes. No war, no president during time of war has ever not been reelected in the United States. Rove knew that. Bush knew that. So we call them terrorists. We use it to justify attacking oil-rich countries. It gets Bush reelected. But has it made America safer? No. Not at all. In fact, it's made the world a more dangerous place. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Standing up for democracy in America, Tom Hartman here with you. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Two women convicted in Red Brigade's killing. So that's how they do it in Italy. Yeah, somebody in the chat room says, okay, these guys, I mean, we don't know yet who actually murdered this judge's husband and mother. This is just the focal point for the curiosity. This is Mr. Hale, the guy who she sent to jail for, or somebody sent to jail for trying to organize a hit on her a couple of years ago. Is he a terrorist? Should we use special laws? I'm telling you, there's a whole bunch of his fellow travelers out there in the United States of America. There's a whole bunch of them. A lot of them. And should, you know, see, I don't think that we need these special categories. We have laws against criminal behavior that we've all agreed on for hundreds of years. And what you call terrorism today has been around forever. It just seems to me that Bush is using the emotional impact of 9/11, the fact that that video of those planes hitting those buildings got played over and over and over again on American television for weeks to the point that the entire nation had post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'm not joking. And then he just stepped right into that emotional vulnerability and rolled out the Patriot Act and rolled out all these other disintegrations of freedoms. And came up with new words like enemy combatant and new rationalizations to lock people up, including Americans, forever. Well, this is a war that won't end in our lifetime. Well, if it's not in our lifetime, you're going to toss somebody in jail without charges, without recourse to the courts, without habeas corpus. That is the right to face your accuser, the right to a trial, the right to have even be charged with a crime, to make bail if appropriate, or to be denied bail. But by a judge. No, George is not going to allow that. Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom.
Is it New York State?
New York City.
Great.
I just wanted you to clear something up for me because I was confused. If I commit a crime, an investigation is initiated and I'm charged with the crime. But it seems like the members of Congress and the president need some kind of congressional majority for an investigation to be initiated. What is the difference between me and them?
Well, it's the rhetorical question that Carolyn Kay of MakeThemAccountable.com always ends her emails with. If a Bush crime family member commits a crime and nobody knows about it, has a crime been committed? It's like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, no one hears it. Did it make a sound? What they're trying to say is, hey, if it's a Republican administration and they've committed a crime, as long as we control Congress, there will be no investigation. Sorry. But we're all in favor of law and order. But
there's a clear case in the case of the propaganda, use of government money for propaganda. That's a clear crime. The police investigate that.
There are 35 major felonies that have been documented that you could charge this administration with. Going back to, for example, hacking into the computers of Democratic senators. This was apparently done out of Bill Frist's office. And this is what was Watergate. Watergate was breaking into the DNC, breaking into the Democratic headquarters and looking through their files. Well, these guys did this for a year and a half, the Republicans in the Senate. And they're breaking into Ted Kennedy's computer, breaking into other people's computer. The Democrats in Congress are saying, we'd like an investigation. We'd like a special prosecutor. We'd like somebody to call the FBI. The administration says, no, we're not going to look into that.
But how are they allowed to do that? Is there a law that allows them to do that?
Well, for a congressional investigation to be initiated, it requires the...
No, I mean a criminal investigation.
Oh, for a criminal investigation, you got to have the FBI prosecuted. These are federal crimes. And for the FBI to do it, you'd have to have John Ashcroft's agreement. And he was unwilling to agree. He was saying, hey, doesn't look like a crime to me.
God.
So
Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Logan. It's the Three Monkeys presidency that we have here, the Three Monkeys administration. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And it is evil. It's not good for America. Just not good. 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Goes on. Is it Groundhog Day again? Goes on. Where's that furry little...
Drums.
Oh, there he is. Uh-oh. Oh, no, that's just Ira. He's all excited. He quit smoking last week. Congratulations, Ira. Good on you. Hey, yell hi. Say hi. There you go. I don't know if you can hear it. I had the mic potted up, but... Anyhow, Ira's breathing. He's breathing fresh air. God bless him. And if you want to talk to him, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the air, have thoughts on these issues. In fact, it looks like Chip in Fort Myers, Florida has something to share with us. Hey, Chip, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Chip?
Well, that's good. First, I want to say thank you for opening the door to an avenue of talk that I've never heard on the radio before, kind of, you know, opening up a lot of the issues that others seem afraid to talk about.
Well, you're welcome.
So thank you for that. And I wanted to ask you also, why are you only on for 1 hour? Because that Lynn Samuels ranting stuff is nowhere near as intellectually stimulating as your program. Why do you only
have
1 hour?
Chip, you're talking about Sirius Satellite Radio, and there's a lot of folks who like Lynn on Sirius. And I don't discuss programming decisions that are of our affiliates. You know, different affiliates carry different, and this is going out on all kinds of radio stations, so it's just nothing I can get into on the air.
Understood. I want to ask you a question about Ward Churchill, because he seems to be coming back up in the news over and over for his comments. I wanted to get your take on, you know, if you think any of the things he said about in his writing about 9/11 were legitimate, or were they off the mark, or how did you feel about that?
I thought they were certainly impolitic, and I would never characterize the people in the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns or as legitimate targets or anything like that. I think the larger issue that he raised, that what happened in 9/11 was the result of the behavior of the United States. I mean, that's pretty indisputable broadly, not necessarily the way he said it, but Osama bin Laden back in 98, when he declared essentially war on the United States, and that letter that he wrote was published in the New York Times, or his fatwa, made the point that if we didn't take our soldiers out of the Holy Land of Saudi Arabia, which was the thing that was making him crazy, and they were put there in 91 by Bush Sr. to, you know, to stage the invasion of Kuwait, that if we didn't take them out, where we had men drinking alcohol and we had women who were driving and they were not wearing the veil and they were drinking alcohol, this was something that Osama just totally flipped him out. I mean, he is the Jerry Falwell of Islam. You know, the Dr. Dobson. He's the moral police of Islam. And he said, if you don't get these guys out of here, I'm going to whack your country. And he was very clear about that. He said that 4 years in, you know, 4 years and 3 years in advance. And the other point that he made was that he wanted Saudi Arabia to charge more for the oil that they were pumping. He thought that oil should be $200 a barrel. And they were selling it for like $20 a barrel. And he felt that we were propping up a regime that was basically sucking dry the resources of the Holy Land and his homeland. And those were his two big issues. And so to the extent that you can say 9/11 was a result of American foreign policy, yeah, that's right. To the extent that you can, you know, I disagree with Ward Churchill that anybody deserves, if that's what he said or that's what he meant to imply, that anybody deserves to be the victim of a terrorist, I wouldn't go there at all. However, the larger issue that gets raised of, you know, whether an academic has the right to be as wacky as he wants, in that regard, you know, I defend his right to be wacky, just as I defend people on the right's right to be wacky. This is the United States. So
yeah, I agree with you there. Well,
answer your question.
Thanks a lot for the information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Terry in Texas on the line. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to say one thing. I'm a reservist, and my wife taped the show all the time for me while I was over in Iraq. And I tell you, she'd send me 4 or 5 tapes at a time. It was good as getting home-cooked cookies and a letter from her.
Well, thank you, Terry.
My main thing, I got a couple things to say real quick. One, last night I was listening to a Republican channel. I just happened to be flipping through channels. And there was this guy talking about those National Guard members up in Vermont. They're, you know, certain townships are trying to pass some kind of, you know, vote to get them to come home.
This happened yesterday here in the People's Republic, and in fact, I've got it in my stack of stuff to talk about today.
Well,
it's in the second hour.
This guy, that's a Republican talk show host, said that commie bastards should be shot.
Well, it's called democracy. I'm sorry. There were actually three towns that voted no and one town that had a tie. So there were four towns where the resolution didn't pass. And my recollection is 48 or something like that towns where it did pass. And it was a resolution that simply called on the governor, who has the right to refuse to provide the National Guard to the president, to call on the governor to say, please bring our National Guard home. We have lost more people in the National Guard. We've had more Vermont soldiers have died on a per capita basis than any other state in the union.
Oh yeah, and so I called up the number and I talked to the guy.
Oh really?
Of course, they wanted to talk to me because, you know, I'm a Democrat.
Uh huh.
I tell him, you know, I'm a liberal, but you know, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah.
I called up and I asked him. I said, you know, when is Bush going to start cutting back the reservist times and everything like that, and I asked him about, you know, when are we going to start seeing these weapons of mass destruction? I asked him several questions. He played the Twilight Zone and the X-Files song on the radio at me, and then he bluntly hung up on me and told me to quit being a crybaby liberal and suck up and do my job because I signed up as a reservist.
Yeah, see, this is the bottom line, is that these guys have no respect for our troops. They have no respect for the sacrifice that's being made. It's all about, you know, if Georgie did it, it's great. And,
yeah,
and you know, it's just
I would like
it's
to
tragic.
Say one quick thing, if I could. Me and my wife and a couple other wives of fellow reservists are going to, we're trying to get a website up right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Adopt a Soldier. It's for, like, the soldiers that don't have family members, you know, that's
right.
Not getting letters and stuff
That's great.
And once we get the website up, I would love to, if it's, you know, if you could work it out somehow, I'd love to come on your show and talk about the website. And I don't know if you would allow me to do that, but
yep.
I would love to come on there and talk about the website.
We're
almost finished on it.
I would be pleased to have you on, Terry. I would be absolutely pleased to have you on. Just give us a call at this number when you got it together, and we'll talk about it. We'll schedule it. We'll put you on. And if you call during, you know, outside of the hours when the show is on, you'll get an answering machine. You can just leave a message. So go for it.
Probably next month sometime, and we hope it goes to a soldier, you know, toothbrushes, everything like that.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that they need, the little care packages.
That's a marvelous thing, Terry. I would love to support it. And,
all right,
and
man.
Thank you for your service to our country, sir.
All right, and God, I really would love you to bring up that issue about that Vermont stuff. And
oh, yeah.
I would love to hear other people's comments if these Vermont people are really, you know, commie bastards, and they should be shot. I would love to really hear about that.
I can't believe somebody. Who? Yeah. By the way, who was the talk show? Do you remember who the talk
Ike
show host was?
Ike Church.
I never heard of him. He must have been a local guy.
He's on Sirius Radio.
Ah, okay.
And his name is Mike Church.
Huh.
And I've listened to him a few times.
Yeah.
And he's more of a person that wants to... You know, he's worried about more of his fan crowd than anything else.
Yeah.
He puts a lot of people down.
That's tragic.
Support Bush and you don't support the war like he does, you're a commie. He said that many a time.
Yeah.
But then he said that they should stick M16 in every Vermont person's face. Say, now, are you going to reject the war? I mean, he was pretty hard on those people up there, and he used it. And then I asked him about it, why he said that. He said, oh, it was just it was just freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was just making a point. And I said, well, you really hit the point.
You know, it's truly tragic, Terry, when discourse, dialogue in the United States, particularly on the airwaves, sinks to this level. This is the kind of stuff, that's hate speech. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that actually harm. This is the point where language can harm people, where words can harm people. Terry, I got to move on, but thanks a lot for the call, and do call us when you get your website together. I would love to publicize it.
I
appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Steve in Detroit, Michigan on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Nice to talk to you, Tom.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just calling, you know about this thing that's going on with the courthouse here with the Ten Commandments?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I was just wondering. Now, I read the Bible, and they say in the Bible that thou should not have engraving images and things like that.
That's
right.
I was
wondering what you think about that, Tom.
Well, it's the first commandment, thou shalt not have graven images, and it's interpreted by many very orthodox folks, some Christian sects, some Jewish sects, and in Islam, there's a similar commandment. It's certainly interpreted by most of Islam as don't have pictures of living things. And although some argue that even a monument with the Ten Commandments on it is engraved and might qualify
right.
as a graven image. But
right.
generally, the religious folks would say, no, that's words. Those don't count. They have to have a picture of a living thing.
That's what I wanted to know, Tom. Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. But, you know, the larger issue is whether the state, frankly, should be promoting religion. And that's really, this is very thinly veiled. You know, that's what that song and dance is really about. And my opinion is, of course, that the state should not be promoting religion. Once it says, okay, cool, we'll put the Ten Commandments over here, and then Reverend Moon's going to come along and say, well, what about my commandments? That whenever you have sex with your wife, you have to have a picture of Reverend Moon watching. Yes, that is one of his commandments. I'm serious. And I would like to have that on the courthouse lawn. And, of course, Reverend Moon is a major contributor to the Republican Party. He owns the Washington Times, the only newspaper that George W. Bush will read. He owns UPI, the news service that Jeff Gannon quotes so often in Talon News. So, I mean, why not put his commandments on the Texas courthouse or in the Detroit courthouse, wherever it may be? And that's the thing. Once you open the door, and then people say, well, but because the Ten Commandments are the basis of law. I'm sorry. According to Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and I'm serious, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, go to my website, tomhartman.com, click on Articles on Democracy, scroll down to the article called The Founders Confront Judge Moore. Both of them agreed in letters sending back and forth to each other and in correspondence with other people that the law, common law in England, started in the 5th century when the Romans got out, and Christianity wasn't introduced into England until the 8th century. So for 200 or 300 years, there was law before there was Christianity. So the basis of law, of English common law, and therefore American law, is not the Ten Commandments. So what are you left with? At least according to the founders of the United States. So what are you left with? You're left with people trying to promote religion on your dime and mine. And, you know, I'm as you know, I'm a fan of spirituality, and I think religion is just a fine thing, as long as it's got nothing to do with my government. Thank you very much. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
You are, once again, so wrong about so many things. But mostly, I wondered what you think about Ward Churchill saying that those people were little Eichmann.
I've already said I wouldn't have said that, and I don't think he's right.
Why?
Because they aren't little Eichmanns. Adolf Eichmann was a unique madman, and these were just average people doing their jobs.
Oh, okay. Well, how do you feel about somebody saying that Dr. Dobson and Jerry Falwell are like Osama bin Laden?
If I am saying that, which I did earlier in this program, and I'm characterizing religious extremists, yeah, I agree with myself.
You would agree that Dr. Dobson and Jerry Falwell are like a guy who murders people in cold blood?
I would agree
innocent
that
people,
I would agree
Eichmanns that he murdered is like Dobson and
I would agree
with
myself.
With
I would agree with myself that Jerry Falwell and Dr. Dobson are like Osama bin Laden in that they both regard themselves as the sole arbiters of morality in the context of their religion.
That's not true.
Oh, it's not.
No.
So Falwell doesn't present himself as the arbiter of morality.
They point to the one that they believe is the arbiter of morality and spirituality. They point to the one.
And I'm sure Osama bin Laden would say the same thing. He every sentence says, you know, praise be the prophet.
Well, that might very well be, but they certainly don't go around killing people and advocating it.
No, you're absolutely right. They don't. And in that regard, there's a huge difference between them and Osama bin Laden. But in the regard that they...
Well, thanks for acknowledging that, Tom.
But see,
mighty big of you.
Here, what you've got, John, is you've got a situation where, for example, in Oklahoma City, you had a...
You talk about hate speech.
In Oklahoma City, you had a terrorist who went in and bombed the Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma Federal Building, killed hundreds of people. And he did it, he said, because he was a Christian. He had been listening to the kind of rhetoric that's coming out of Dobson and out of Bob Jones University and out of Jerry Falwell, John. Your turn. John? Apparently John has left us. I had potted him down for a moment so I could finish a sentence. Turn him back up. He's not there. John, you could have had the mic. It was all yours. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, it was from your program that we learned about the video in plain sight. That video shows building number 7, WTG,
mm-hmm.
being imploded or pulled on orders from the owner. I keep wondering how they did that.
Yeah, I do. I do, too. I frankly don't have any clue.
It takes a couple of months to set up that kind of a planned demolition. 911 was an inside job, Tom.
Well, Alice, you know, I just don't know. It may well be. I'm not saying it wasn't. I just don't know. I've seen the videos. I read A New Pearl Harbor, the leading kind of conspiracy book on it, and it's a horrible picture that they paint.
I know it.
And frankly, scary. I don't want to believe it. And I'm not completely there yet, Alice. I would like to see somebody answer some of the hard questions, which the 9/11 Commission did not do. And there's still a lot of them that need to be answered. Alice, thanks so much for the call. It's always wonderful to hear from you. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by.
Yes. Welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour. And I know it's a rough segue from Louis Armstrong to Jerry Falwell.
That I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
This being 9/11, Jerry Falwell saying 9/11, God allowed 9/11 to happen. He agrees with it, and it's all because of the gays.
Well, I totally concur.
And Pat Robertson agreeing.
The problem is we've adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do, and the top people, of course, the court system.
And even the courts are responsible.
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if, in fact, God continues to lift the curtain and allow...
It's a new threat from Jerry Falwell.
The enemies to give us probably what we deserve.
What we deserve, John in Grand Rapids. Jerry Falwell saying he apparently agrees with Osama bin Laden.
Jerry, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
And Pat Robertson, of course, agrees as well. No, they're completely different. Robertson and Falwell, they're completely different from Osama bin Laden. Yeah, right. 1-866-889-8894. Doug in Sarasota, Florida. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you shouldn't do that to Louis Armstrong.
I know, it was a terrible segue. usually I try and wrap the hour up on an upbeat note, but I had those clips and I just had to play them. So anyhow.
Yeah, well,
we've only got about a minute. What's up, Doug?
Just real quick, this is off the subject slightly, but I'm a professor in Sarasota, Florida, where I was just learning about this academic bill of rights that Ohio Republicans are proposing. And just real quick, I thought it was ironic. They're worried about the dissenting views in academia when,
yes.
Wasn't it during the 1980s when the Fairness Doctrine was proposed by the Republicans or Ronald Reagan? And
No, actually, Reagan ended the Fairness Doctrine.
Ended the Fairness Doctrine.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
But I think it's... Yeah, they're
trying to do in academia the opposite of what they did in the media. I agree with you. It is absolutely weird. Doug, I got to wrap up the show. Thanks for the call, though. It's a good point that you made. It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman radio program. Telling the truth, the multinational corporations would rather you didn't know.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You are smack dab down in the middle of the vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Perhaps you've seen the ads, writes John Sweeney. I'm assuming that being the John Sweeney of the AFL-CIO, it's published in the Detroit Free Press. Perhaps you've seen the ads. He's talking about the Walmart ads. Recent college graduate who's furnished her first real apartment, a trio of seniors who come to shop and socialize. And he talks about how Walmart went out and they bought 100 full-page ads in newspapers across the country. They are, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, they're sponsoring the local public radio station. So if you listen to public radio, if you get any news at all from them or whatever, you get to hear these, underwritten by Walmart, where we take good care of our employees, or whatever they say. Some thing about, their average wages or whatever. And the CEO, Lee Scott of Walmart, hit the circuit. He even showed up on Good Morning America. What's going on? Well, Walmart is trying to clean up their image because they're being portrayed as some sort of Darth Vader of the corporate world. An example for purposes of illustration shared with us by John Sweeney, Dolly Stickler. During the year and a half, this I'm reading John's words, during the year and a half Stickler of Alliance, Ohio worked at a Walmart. She made no more than $5.85 an hour, often under the most trying circumstances. Once, when Dolly's daughter was hospitalized, she requested 3 days off and found herself punished and ineligible for promotion for not calling in each day. She frequently worked off the clock when she couldn't complete her tasks within her shift. Sometimes her checks were short, although her managers would insist the amount was correct. Like many Walmart workers, Dolly couldn't afford the company's health care program for herself or for her family. The $250 average premium per month is approximately 25% of the take-home pay of the typical employee. So like many of her co-workers, Dolly put her children on the taxpayer-funded Ohio health plan. Yes, folks, you and me pay for the majority of Walmart's employees' health, regardless of what may be said on advertisements on TV. I shouldn't say the majority of their employees. I don't know the exact number. Many of their employees, let's say. Dolly's story, notes John Sweeney, isn't unusual or extreme. Only about 40% of Walmart workers can afford the company's health care plan, meaning untold numbers are forced onto public health rolls, see, untold numbers, where the taxpayer will foot the bill. A 2002 Georgia study survey showed that 10,261 of the 166,000 children covered by Peach Care for Kids, the state health insurance plan, were children of Walmart employees. That was 14 times the next highest employer. And he goes on to point out, this shouldn't surprise anybody. Walmart is claiming that their average employee makes $9.68 an hour. That's $17,000 a year. That's below the poverty wage for a family of four in the United States. Although the VP of communications at Walmart says, well, hourly jobs like those offered by Walmart are generally not designed to support a family. Fine, you ask. Why don't people just get another job? Writes John Sweeney. Well, Walmart's making that tougher, too. They pressure their suppliers into replicating their model, forcing them to cut costs and move operations overseas. And, in fact, I challenge you to go into a Walmart store and find, I won't say anything made in America, but find anything of significance. Very tough. And he goes on to say, and this is the must be clear, although I'm not singling out Walmart, this is about something much broader. A race to the bottom in corporate America. Walmart is the largest private employer in the country, employing more than 1.2 million Americans. In 2003, the company had $256 billion in sales. And there's a ripple effect from all this. Well, and the point that I would add to that is that Walmart is simply doing, I mean, there have been a few cases where there has been some demonstration of Walmart actually breaking the rules, violating the law, things like that. But I'm willing to give Walmart the benefit of the doubt and suggest that those are probably the exceptions rather than the rule. And that in all probability, the vast majority of Walmart managers and certainly the senior management of Walmart wants to run the company by the law. And therein lies the problem, the law. Walmart is doing, by and large, what the law allows. That's what needs to be changed, is the law. When Ronald Reagan started dismantling protections against monopolies, when Reaganomics came along and all the mergers and acquisition mania, and at the federal level, we lost any protection against corporations getting too large and too destructive to democracy. When corporations, when J.C. Penney sued the state of Florida and said that they were being discriminated against under the 14th Amendment, which was passed after the Civil War to free the slaves, that they were being discriminated against because the state of Florida had laws that made it a little more expensive for an out-of-store chain store to operate than for a local store, an attempt to level the playing field for local entrepreneurs. J.C. Penney came in and said, this is discrimination. We're a person. This is the same as if you said, we have different prices for white people than for black people. And the Supreme Court, go figure, went along with it. And said, okay, J.C. Penney's a person. Walmart's a person. You can't discriminate against them. They want to do business in your community? Tough luck. Well, now over 100 communities in Pennsylvania, in the state of Pennsylvania, with help from and encouragement by the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, Tom Lindsay's group. You can find their website, www.celdf.org, as in Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF. Over 100 communities in Pennsylvania now have passed laws, local ordinances, saying, in our community, a corporation is not a person. This needs to be done at a national level. We need to change the law. We need to, you know, if I believe that Walmart is willing to abide by the law. To do is change the law. Taft-Hartley, 1947, unionization was had hit its peak in the United States. It was just rolling along, just great. And all of a sudden, a middle class was emerging. Why? Because now, for the first time since basically the pre-Civil War era, for the first time, labor, you know, people, working people had some say in how things were. I mean, prior to the Civil War, it was family farms that basically ran the industrial economy. This was from 35 with the passage of the Wagner Act, which allowed for unionization nationwide. Didn't just allow for it. I mean, promoted it. The creation of the National Labor Relations Board and, you know, to look out for the interests of labor, now being corrupted by the Bush administration to trash the interests of labor. And in 1947, it was just rolling along, and the Republicans took control of the House and Senate that year. Harry Truman was president, the Democrat. And they passed the Taft-Hartley Act saying, well, you know, if a state doesn't want to have unions, they don't have to. And Harry Truman vetoed that law that was designed to cut the guts out of the middle class that was emerging. But there were enough Republicans in the House and Senate that they were able to override his veto. And so the middle class, you know, unionization began to slowly decline, and along with it went the middle class. Ronald Reagan comes into office, declares war on working America, starting with PATCO and then on from there. And now we've got, I mean, you've got Rod Page, the former education secretary, saying, oh, teachers union, they're terrorists. How dare they? You've got Arnold Schwarzenegger in California promoting video, sending videos out to TV stations, trashing the right. Well, not actually promoting a new regulation that would give employers the right to say, no, I'm sorry, you can't take a break for lunch if you've worked 5 hours. And, of course, this is part of most union contracts. It's part of laws in a lot of states. What has happened? What has happened to our nation? This is just, I'm sorry, this is off the scale. So it's, you know, we can all get righteously indignant about Walmart. I certainly am. But the bottom line is, it's really ultimately not Walmart's fault. It is the fault of our legislators, which means ultimately it is the fault of us. that we, the people, have not been standing up loudly enough, assertively enough, vocally enough, that we have not been supporting organized labor, that we have not been out on the streets, we have not been writing our letters to the editor, we have not been calling talk shows and saying, hey, wait a minute, we have not been calling our newspapers to task and our TV stations and our radio stations for why don't you talk about the average wage earner? How come I'm hearing every single day about what the stock market is and I don't hear what my average wage is any longer? Why has it been 20 years in America? Why has it been since the Reagan administration that we've heard anything about working people in America? Until we start to speak up, you're going to see the continuing destruction of working America. This is just, you know, just very simple. I mean, this is just their agenda. There's no surprise here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bill in Jericho Springs, Missouri on the line. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was just wondering, is it too late for me to give you a couple of quotes from two very religious leaders?
Depends on how long they are.
They're very short.
Okay, sure, go for it.
Okay, this one here is, I hope I live to see the day when, as in the early days of our country, we won't have any public schools. The churches will have taken them all over again, and Christians will be running them. What a happy day that will be. That was the Reverend Jerry Falwell on 223-204.
Yeah, I mean, that's Osama bin Laden's agenda, too, is absolute religious education. In fact,
I know.
Al-Qaeda sponsors
now, here's the other
schools.
One. Secular schools can never be tolerated because such a school has no religious instruction and a general moral instruction without a religious foundation is built on error. Consequently, all character training and religious must be derived by faith. We need believing people to run this country. That, my friend, was Adolf Hitler,
yeah.
April 26, 1933.
There you go. Well said. I'll bet for a lot of people they raised their eyebrows at that point. But in late 33 or early 34, Adolf Hitler appointed Bishop Mueller was his name.
Yes, he did.
As the
yes.
Reichsbishop, the Reichsbishop for the German government, and created essentially an official state religion. Which was sort of pseudo-Protestant. This guy was a Lutheran minister, and Hitler was Catholic, so go
figure.
That's
right. That's right.
Anyhow.
Tons of pictures on the that you can pick up from this.
Oh, yeah,
just
Google Hitler and Christianity, and your eyes will bug out what you see.
I know.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. Common Sense and Truth in Broadcasting.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. Oh, wait till you hear what they're doing with the radioactive waste. Yeah, it's getting strange, my friends. It's getting strange here in America. The Republicans running the show. I tell you, we'll get into that after we hear the news of the day from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., Victoria Jones on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, how are you?
I am great. What's up? How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. Well, the House Appropriations Committee is very busy today, and this afternoon it's going to be hearing from new Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff.
Yes.
Don't know what he's going to say, but it's going to be about appropriations and things like that. So that's going to be kind of intriguing just to get more of a sense of what he has to say.
Michael, water boredom of electric shock to the gonads, Chertoff. Yes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And you better be careful what you say or you might get them too.
Yeah. After
you've been locked away for several years, like Jose Padilla.
I could tell you strange things about my telephones, but let's not go there. It's, yeah.
Really?
No, seriously. This was right. I will just very quickly tell you about a month after I started this program, which is a little more than 2 years ago. For about a month, and this was, you know, Patriot Act, everything like that. For about a month, whenever we used the telephone, our home telephone number, you could hear somebody breathing. It was like,
whoa,
like that. And if you commented on it, it would get louder. It would become. like that. And it went on for a month, every single phone call. And it was just, you know, it was like, hey, we're here, we're in your face. I mean, it wasn't even, you know, gee, maybe they're tapping my phone. It was like.
How do you know it was them?
Well, I have no idea who it was. But, you know, whoever it was, they were there for a month and then they went away. And
how strange.
Yeah, it was very weird. And it was, you know, frankly, Louise is coming in here giving me, come on, look at this. But it, anyway, yeah, as I said, see, this is the, you know, Alice calls me up from Humboldt County and she says, you know, 9/11 was really a conspiracy. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm willing to believe anything after this, you know. So, anyhow, it's your turn, Victoria. What's
yeah,
going on?
Yeah, the whole conspiracy thing. Yeah, for 9/11, I'm not prepared to go there.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to, but boy, oh boy, is it anyway.
But subsequent to that, you know, I mean, people will capitalize on events, and I think that's what's happened.
Yeah, well, that absolutely has happened, and that in and of itself is a crime, in my opinion.
Definitely, yeah. Or very close to it. Well, the other things that are going on, I'm sure, I imagine you may have been talking about Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska.
Have not.
Who said to the National Association of Broadcasters earlier this week that he thought it would be a very good idea, and in fact he's probably going to introduce legislation to this effect, that pay TV, cable TV, HBO, things like that, should be subject to the same kind of restrictions obscenity-wise as regular broadcast TV.
Yeah, at that point Howard Stern went running for the Valium, I'm sure.
Absolutely, or he's just going to go to a different country and start, oh, he could broadcast over the internet, but maybe they'll do that too.
Well, let's hope not.
So it is very interesting. Now, whether there's talk that this would be tacked on to the bill raising the fines up to $500,000, and that might make it more difficult to get through. Senator John McCain is not on board with this.
Yeah.
I mean, Ted Stevens' argument seemed to be that, you know, well, people are still going to get shocked or surprised by what they see. And, of course, the argument against that is so obvious. You've bought it.
Right.
You know, you're paying for it. You bought it because you want to see that. And if you don't want your kids to see it, then...
Well, you know who's going to knock that down, Victoria? Who's going to knock that down is AT&T and Marriott and all these... I mean, well, not so much Marriott, actually. But AT&T and Verizon and Quest. I mean, the big providers particularly cable TV services, they're making a fortune on pornography.
Absolutely.
You've got porn on demand, and they're making more profit off that than they are on just basic cable services. And it's become a major profit center. These large Republican corporations, in some cases, they're making billions of dollars on hardcore pornography. That's who's going to say, no, we can't allow this to happen. So.
And there's already been a Supreme Court decision, the details of which escape me, that had to do with Playboy television.
Yeah.
But in which they basically said, no, you can't just regulate it.
Yeah. So
I don't think this is going anywhere, but it's scary that... it's going that far.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's just too much money on the table for it to go any farther. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for the report today. Great to
Thank
hear
you.
From you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly.
Let's say Howard Dean. Teach the Democrats how to fly, Howard, please.
We're only waiting for this moment to arrive.
I am actually very optimistic. I'm not even a Democrat. I'm very, very optimistic that this guy's out there and he's doing the work he's doing. 27 minutes before the hour, Billy in Santa Cruz on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. Hey, Billy.
Hey, Tom.
Haven't heard from you in a while. Great to hear from you again.
Well, it's hard for me to call now.
Really?
Yeah. Because you're aiding and abetting the enemy.
Okay.
And here's what I mean by that.
Jeez, I get it from every side, Billy.
Don't you? I know. I hate to do this to you, but I need to do it to you, okay?
Okay, all right. Here
so
I
bear am. With me a minute.
All right. Yes, sir. Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
hey, I went through basic training. I know what abuse is about.
Believe me, I've never been near basic training.
Yeah.
So, for example, you just had a report on that I want to correct the lady from the news service mistold part of the truth there.
Okay.
Because she said that John McCain was not on board with Ted Stevens.
Yeah.
John McCain, who I'd like to remember, is supposed to be the one of the most courageous people we have in Congress because of what he did as a young man in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Is one of the least courageous humans I know today as a result of being a congressman. So while it obviously
he's a senator, actually.
What?
He's a senator, actually.
Congressman.
He's a member of Congress.
You could say that for either side because they're both members of Congress.
No, I don't think so. I think congressman means House of Representatives and senator means Senate. But.
Okay. At any rate, you know, this very brave Vietnam war hero has been a chicken. There's a lot of bad words you won't let me use, and that's sort of what this is about.
Yeah.
Words that we'd like to use. They're totally good words, part of the American lexicon. But Mr. McCain, when he hears Ted Stevens' idea, says, well, we need to investigate. We need to have a commission.
Yeah,
need a commission.
Yeah, I assume you're talking about his conversation with Chris Matthews last night on Hardball. Yeah, I saw that. And, he's just doing what politicians do. He's not going
All right, but let's be clear about what politicians do. They are not brave people. They are chickens.
By and large.
It's just so interesting.
By and large. There are some politicians who I think are very brave.
Now let's talk about your responsibility.
Paul Wellstone, Bernie Sanders, Dennis Kucinich.
Let's talk about your responsibility in the media now.
Yes, sir.
The reason I stopped calling was because when I made a simple exclamation of using the pretend God's son's name.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say it?
No, you said Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and you objected to that.
Yeah, I did.
You don't understand that, you know, that's a totally unnecessarily fascist control of my speech.
No, it's my show. Yeah, I'll acknowledge that.
Of course it is.
I'll acknowledge that anybody, you know, if you're on anybody's show, they have absolute fascist control of that. Sure. I'll acknowledge that. I'm the Tom Hartman Show Nazi.
And the reason that I'm not allowed to mention the name of a historical figure is what exactly?
Well, as a curse word in a negative sense, because
it wasn't a curse word, it was a word of shock and exclamation.
No, it seemed
frustration.
It just because it seemed gratuitous. You know, it's like I know Bobby Billy that you have a large enough intellect and a large enough vocabulary that you can communicate your outrage without having to resort to what some people consider to be profanity.
Why considered by whom to be profanity?
By some of
them. You can't make a society based on the most uptight, sick, neurotic people in the room and say, when we finally get those immature, superstitious idiots comfortable, now we've got a good society. Serious about that?
Yeah.
I have to wait for everybody to be comfortable?
You're wildly overstating and mischaracterizing my point, but in any case.
No, I'm trying to get you to see the other side because
I know the other side, Bobby.
I got to tell you something. I'm a bright guy, and I can't find any reason why I shouldn't be allowed to make an exclamation like that if it comes up due to natural frustration by the facts.
Yeah, well, you did, as I recall.
I did, and then I was told not to do it again. So now I can't call anymore because I didn't do it on purpose.
It's
a natural slip. I can manage not to say the F word, but I can't manage to go, geez, or whatever, you know, whatever version of that is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think you should ask me to. I'm insulted that you asked me to, and in my opinion, you're working for the conservatives because the next thing you're going to do is not complain about the word Jesus Christ, but they're going to complain about the word George Bush. They're going to say if you don't support
Actually, Billy, I'm not going to. And I said that to you because I thought you had been calling this program long enough, and I thought that we were close enough that I could just say, hey, you know, the ambience of this show is that I really don't want to get into that. I thought that you'd just say, okay, cool. And, I'm sorry I offended you.
I can't say it because it seems to me that it's you are taking a segment of the society that we need to start upbraiding and saying to them, y'all think you're entitled to have a world where you're comfortable.
Yeah, well, Billy, I'm sorry. I'm not going there. I am not going to just gratuitously throw out words on my program that offend or hurt some people just, you know, to satisfy your need to blow off steam. That's life. Bill in Chicago. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Tom.
You going to yell Jesus Christ?
No, sir, but boy, Billy sure sounds angry.
Let's try and keep it a family show. I'm not playing censor. If somebody says that, you know, they say that. And Billy said it, and I said, hey, Billy, you know, in the future, why don't you use some other phrase, you know?
Okay.
And he goes ballistic about it. Jeez.
Did you see Lou Dobbs last night?
There I go. No, I didn't.
Well, he did about a 10-minute segment on labor.
Yeah.
And he had somebody from the AFL-CIO on, you know, by himself so he wouldn't get interrupted.
Yeah, Lou Dobbs is the only... Why is Lou Dobbs the only guy on network television?
And because he gets that the middle class goes away, he'll go away.
Yeah. Well, he's. I think what's happened is he stumbled across this a couple of years ago as a topic, and it got such a strong response that he says, okay, we'll milk this. And you know, he has a degree in economics, and he's a Republican. He's an old kind of Goldwater, Rockefeller Republican. You know, classic conservative.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And he says, you know, this is a topic that we can run with, and he's turned it into a crusade, and God bless him. I think it's great what he's done.
Yeah, I watch him instead of the network news now. So.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Him and Keith Olbermann. Those are the two guys who are doing news that's got a little bit of an edge to it.
How do they get away with it?
Well, they're both on cable.
I understand that, but, I mean, they still have bosses, and, you know...
I have a feeling that they both have limits. They both have thresholds that they don't cross, but...
Boy, I don't know about Lou.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was all gung-ho for the war in Iraq.
Well...
He supports George Bush more often than he opposes him. It's just that on these particular topics, he opposes him. But in any case, is that what you called about, or is it a specific point, or...
No, I just wanted to know if you, you talk about, you know, there's nobody doing labor news. Well, he did a little bit of it anyway.
Yeah, he is, and he does a good job, and I salute him for that. And, you know, yeah.
Have a good day.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Sure. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. It's 19 minutes before the hour. Removing all radioactive waste called impractical. This from today's Wall Street Journal. Impractical to take a contaminated site with nuclear waste. I'm sure it was impractical to clean up Love Canal, too, for the people who had polluted it. As a federal advisory board said it isn't practical or necessary to remove all traces of radioactive waste from former nuclear weapons sites and urged the Energy Department to revamp its program to clean up such sites. The council also said that to minimize political and legal problems likely to result from leaving wastes behind, the program should be run by an outside regulator who might improve its, and then the Wall Street Journal puts this in quotation marks, credibility, end quote. I mean, this is just a classic example of the way that organizations, groups, in this case, actually, it's probably the Department of Defense within the government itself, although the, you know, large involvement of corporate America in this, and ultimately this is probably going to have significant impact on the nuclear power industry, and perhaps the, no doubt, the let's manufacture weapons out of depleted uranium industry, the weapons manufacturing industry, that they bring in a regulator to legitimize what they're doing. To make it legitimate. You know, it's like, well, you know, well, for example, an example in my book on equal protection, George Herbert Walker Bush was vice president during the Reagan administration. Monsanto was developing genetically modified organisms. There were none on the market, and there were none that had been developed, as far as I know, at least none in commercial availability. And they came to George W. Bush and they said, we want regulation. We want regulation. They wanted to be regulated. And it's like, whoa, they wanted to be. And people say, well, why? Why did they want to be regulated? Well, because, for example, let me give you a larger example, and then this will just click and it'll all fall into place. Mercury is a toxin. Arsenic is a toxin. And well, let's take the example of arsenic. And let's say that we know that at a dilution of 10 parts per billion, arsenic is dangerous. Let's say we have some evidence that at 7 parts per billion, it's dangerous. And there is that evidence. And so... You and I live in a community downwater, downstream from a gold mine where they're using arsenic to leach the gold out of the rock. And one of our kids gets some horrible disease that seems to be related to arsenic. Some manifestation of arsenic poisoning. And so we go in and we sue the company. What's the company's defense? Say, did you know that you were putting arsenic in the water? Yes, we're using it to leach gold out of gold ore. Did you know that arsenic is toxic? Yes, we did. Okay, you have to pay a fine. But if they can get a law passed that says, or get a regulatory agency to rule, to create a rule, a regulatory rule that says, yes, it's illegal to contaminate water with arsenic, but here's how we define the word contaminate. Contaminate means greater than 10 parts per billion. So if it's less than 10 parts per billion, it's not contaminated. And so now, if a company is dumping arsenic in the water, and the water that we're getting downstream is 7 parts per billion, and somebody in our family has some horrible disease as a result of it, and we go to the company and we say, hey, we're going to sue you. We would like to be paid. We would like to be compensated. We'd like to have this covered, please. Is this, there's arsenic poisoning here. Let's do something about it. And the company can say, tough luck. What we did is perfectly legal. We're below the 10 parts per billion limit. And you have absolutely no recourse. None. I find it fascinating that the vast majority of regulations, or a significant majority of regulations in the United States, are regulations that industry has actually asked for. There's a great book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, which gets into this in some considerable detail. And so here we have, so now let's bring in an outside regulator, that would be another agency, to improve its credibility, to minimize political and legal problems likely to result from leaving radioactive waste behind. This in the nation's 114 closed nuclear weapons facilities. The department's accelerated nuclear weapons waste burial program is expected to cost $142 billion and run to 2035. That sounds like a lot, and it sounds like a long time. $142 billion. That's a lot to clean up all the nuclear waste from building bombs all those years. But back when they were saying, okay, let's clean up all of the waste so that we don't have any future radioactive love canals, they had scheduled $300 billion for the cleanup, and it was going to take 70 years. So the Bush administration says, no, we can get this done by 2035 for $142 billion. All we have to do is pass a regulation that says it's okay to leave behind little radioactivity, and we get to define what is a little. Yeah. And now you've got this argument, shall we say. Thomas B. Cochran, nuclear waste expert for the National Resources Defense Council, which sued over waste being left at the Savannah River nuclear power plant or nuclear plant facility. The issue is how much you're going to leave. He's a physicist. He says the EPA should regulate the cleanup, while the National Research Council says, no, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission should be in charge. And tune in as this continues. Patent ruling. This is another one from the Wall Street. I mean, the Wall Street Journal is just full of interesting news today. Patent ruling irks inventors, aids companies. I'll just read you the first sentence and a half. I think you get it. David and Goliath battles over patent infringement have gotten tougher for the little guy. Gee, first it's limiting class action lawsuits. Little guy can't sue if he's harmed, or she. Then now it's bankruptcy reform, so the little guy can't declare bankruptcy. And now it's patent reform. As William Bulkley writes in today's Wall Street Journal, it also limits the clout of individual inventors and makes lawyers less willing to take them on as clients on a contingency basis. Inventor Ed Poole of Blacksburg, Virginia, says the decision certainly doesn't bode well for the high-profile suit he recently filed, accusing technology giant Dell, Inc. of willfully violating his 2003 patent on computer-controlled international trade. Mr. Poole, they add, who has made no money from his patent, says he sent Dell a notice several years ago that it was infringing the patent. Here's what Mr. Poole had to say about it. Anything that makes it more difficult to prove willful infringement is not good. The system is already severely stacked against the small inventor. Dell said it doesn't comment on pending litigation as a matter of policy. Well, that ain't nothing compared to what GE is up to. You got to hear about this. I'll share it with you right after this break. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman. It's a beautiful day.
Oh, what a marvelous day. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. I'm Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. GE pins hopes on emerging markets. This by an article by Catherine Krenhold in today's Wall Street Journal. General Electric Company. Why is he quoting the Wall Street Journal? Actually, I read three newspapers every morning, not to mention all the stuff we read on the internet and everywhere else. But it just continually amazes me. You read Forbes, Fortune, the Wall Street Journal. You read the publications where the ruling elite of America are talking to themselves. And they don't assume that folks like you and I are listening in. I mean, the subscription to the Wall Street Journal is not cheap. And they're talking to themselves, and they just lay it out. They just lay it out. Here's the lead paragraph. General Electric Company expects to get as much as 60% of its revenue growth from developing countries over the next decade, Chairman and Chief Executive Jeffrey Immelt said in his company's annual report. He calls this a strategy, and as Catherine Krenhold notes in the Wall Street Journal, it marks a major shift from the past decade when just 20% of the conglomerate's revenue came from developing countries. GE is now, instead of counting on the U.S. and Europe, GE is now looking to China, India, the Middle East, and Asia to buy its turbines, aircraft engines, and medical devices. In addition, it expects to sell mortgages and credit cards to a growing middle class in Eastern Europe, including Russia and Southeast Asia, and eventually China. Now, why would they do that? Well, because we've changed the laws in America so that there are no more tariffs on. Do we have global free trade? What does that mean? It means the multinational corporations like GE get incredibly rich, and they're no longer really committed to the United States. 60% of your growth outside the United States. In my mind, that doesn't mean that you're making a serious commitment to America. And, of course, that's not their charter. Their charter is to make a serious commitment to profit to their stockholders. That's what they're going to do. So our insane, out-of-their-minds members of the House and Senate and Bill Clinton pushed through, and not to just nail it on Bill Clinton, because it started with Ronald Reagan, started harping about this thing. Most favored nation status and fast track and NAFTA and GATT. George Bush Sr. pushing for it. Clinton finally pushed the thing through. And here we are. GE's outlook is echoed by most multinationals. Notes the Wall Street Journal. It's the end of the middle class. Unless we do something about it and do something soon. Where's Ross Perot when you need him? Talk radio for the rest of us. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
So who did kill John Kennedy? And who was Deep Throat, for that matter? If you have a clue, let us know. the question of the day? I don't think so. It's just Ira and I were just discussing this. He's reading, I think it's Mafia Kingfish, John Davis's book. Really a remarkable story. Just absolutely remarkable. You know, the new book, they're just not into you. By the way, welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, the new book, they're just not that into you. The No Excuses Truth. Well, here's the, they're just not into you if you can't pay for the date yourself. Who's the they, by the way? The Republicans, of course. They're just not that in. They're just not that into you if you can't pay for the date yourself, because borrowing trillions of dollars is never romantic. As the Wall Street Journal noted, quote, Mr. Bush proposes to borrow the money to pay for a Social Security plan, perhaps $1 trillion to $2 trillion over 10 years, end quote. Yeah, they're just not that into you if they stand you up. Because if they really wanted you, they'd listen to what you have to say. Quoting from the Boston Herald, yesterday's stop on his campaign-style reform push brought a little more than a collective ho-hum from Granite Staters. White House aides collected empty chairs before Bush took the stage, since only half of the 2,000 free tickets were taken. That from this year, February 17th. Just a few months ago, just last month. They're just not that in the post-election. Isn't that fascinating? Only half of the free tickets were taken. Of course, you know, you had to, they had to know that you were going to suck up to Georgia or you couldn't be there. They could only find 2,000 people. They're just not that into you if they disapprove of your behavior. Because if they liked what you were doing, they would say so. To quote USA Today, only one in three Americans approve of President Bush's handling of Social Security, his lowest rating on the issue since he took office. Well, they're just not that into you if they think you're lying to them. Because the only relationships that work are built on trust, as the Philadelphia Inquirer noted on February 23rd. At two stops, the Pennsylvania Republican Senator Rick Santorum encountered skepticism and hostility as he voiced his support for the White House plan. Is this the Social Security privatization plan? He was heckled by protesters, called a liar, and told that his views were unconscionable. End of quote. They're just not into you because they know it can never work. This joke, by the way, paid for and authorized by, it's not paid for, but written by the Democratic National Committee. I just give credit where credit is due or reveal my sources, as the case may be. You will not hear right-wingers say, oh, I got this memo this morning from the Republican Party, because that's all they have. That's actually something the Democrats sent us, and I thought it was cute. So, retirement plan. This from the front page of the Personal Journal, so I have the fourth section of today's Wall Street Journal. Here we go. I'm telling you, it's one of those days where it just doesn't stop. It's just where the plan, the proposal of the Bush administration with regard to Social Security is, let's hand these things over to private corporations, the banking industry, the investment industry, and they will handle it the same way that they do 401ks. Right? 401k is such a great idea. We need to have 401k accounts. A marvelous thing. Or these retirement plans. And in fact, 401ks like IRAs and SEP accounts, but in particular, 401ks are actually provided for by a change in the law. The federal government provides, you know, passed a law that makes contributions to 401ks by employers tax deductible. In fact, gives them an incentive to match your investment and gives average workers an investment to put money into their 401k. You don't have to pay taxes on it until you take money out of it. Presumably you're retired and at a lower tax bracket. And your money will accumulate faster because it's before tax money. So 401ks are just marvelous, aren't they? Why don't we just pattern the new Social Security privatization plan after them? Makes perfect sense. Except, well, just let me just share with you the first two paragraphs. Just the first two paragraphs from this front page story, the fourth section of today's Wall Street Journal. Article by Kelly Green. Retirement plans are facing a growing threat, theft. Labor Department investigators found 1,269 incidents of missing 401k money in the fiscal year ended September 30th. That is a 37-fold increase. That's 3,700% increase from the 34 violations found in 1995. These are programs that have, by the way, no guaranteed payouts, but they have, as this Wall Street Journal notes, skyrocketed in popularity. But here, the Wall Street Journal, again, they just kind of lay it out. But worker protections are relatively weak. So standalone sentence. I'm not taking something out of context. It's right there. While the federal government requires a yearly independent audit of retirement plans with at least 100 workers, that doesn't cover the vast majority of plans. According to the Labor Department's most recent statistics, I'm reading here from the Wall Street Journal, 627,905 defined contribution plans covered fewer than 100 workers and had no required audit in 1999. That's the last year, apparently, for which there's statistics. Only 55,195 such plans fell under the rule. In other words, over 600,000, no audit necessary. You can steal from your employees. There's only 55,000 such plans where you've got more than 100 employees where they actually have to have an audit. And then the Wall Street Journal notes, or Kelly Green notes in the Wall Street Journal, employees often have little recourse. Or is it recourse? She says traditional pension plans with fixed payments to retirees, known as defined benefit plans, these are your classic pensions, right, can be bailed out by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation if they fail. There is no such safety net for defined contribution plans. You get robbed? Tough luck. I'm telling you, get ready. There's people in the Bush administration just licking their chops. People on Wall Street going, oh, boy, this is why we gave George those millions to get him reelected in 2004, or get him elected in 2004. Employees could face greater risks as new types of personal accounts spread. The Medicare prescription drug law created health savings accounts. Turns out they have the same problem. Karen Friedman, Pension Rights Center, Washington, D.C., says, and I quote, the more billions of individual little accounts, the greater chance you have of fraud, end quote. What a surprise. While the amount of money, the Wall Street Journal notes, while the amount of money invested in 401k plans doubled to $1.8 trillion from 1995 to 2003, the number of federal investigators charged with looking into irregularities in 401ks is up only 38% from 1995 through the current fiscal year. So we doubled the number of plans, the amount of money. We slightly increased the number of regulators. And 600,000 of these plans don't require an audit. Only 55,000 do. And now the biggest problem people are having with 401ks is theft. Have you ever heard of somebody's Social Security being stolen from them by an administrator of the plan? You hear about people, you know, robbing people's mailboxes. But that's going to happen, you know, that can happen with your paycheck. But have you ever heard of somebody inside the Social Security Administration stealing somebody's money? In 70 years, have you ever heard of somebody embezzling money out of the Social Security Administration? You haven't? Well, that's because it's these boring government bureaucrats wearing their green eye shades and doing their work for their nice boring government paycheck with their nice boring government pension, just doing the people's work. Whereas we've seen a 3,700% increase in theft from 401k plans. Most of it, by the way, by employers. And they go through and they talk about it. They give the examples of, you know, this company stole this way, another company stole another way. Mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, is our telephone number if you'd like to call in today. The chat room can be reached, our live chat room, where I hang out during breaks, is at tomhartman.com. Just click the live chat button, and it will get you there. G. Edward in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, G. Oop, let
First
me turn up your volume here. Try it again.
Hello?
You're live now. I'm sorry. I had the volume potted down.
Okay. First-time caller. I'm G.A. Edward, G. Edward Cook.
Uh-huh.
I'll be running for Senate against Rick Santorum.
Oh, really? Well, congratulations. Good on you.
I sent you some letters and things in the mail.
Ah, yeah. I have a message from you that I intend to respond to. It's been my apologies. We have a mutual friend in Rob Call.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the Social Security.
Sure. Go for it.
One thing is we have to change our language like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We should say Social Security is going even. It's not going broke. It's going even.
Yeah, it's going actually back to where it was for about 40 years, 50 years.
And the way to solve this whole problem is to raise the minimum wage from an immoral $5.25 an hour to $8. This would be the cure.
Well, that's Yeah, that's so elegant.
Yeah.
That's so simple. And you wouldn't even have to raise the cap then, because the majority of Social Security taxes are paid by 70% of people who pay no income tax. They don't even qualify to pay income tax, are paying about 70% of the Social Security tax. I mean,
it would come out to just the increase for someone making minimum wage 40 hours a week would be about $100 a week clear that they would be making an increase. And the added money going to Social Security would be almost $700 a year per person.
So all you have to do is raise the minimum wage to how much?
I figure about $8 an hour. That's not really enough. But, you know, Rick Santorum, he's against this. Well, what does he think about these people? This is an immoral. It's completely immoral. My whole campaign is I'm bringing morality back to America.
Yeah, well, Rick Santorum has as many of these cons do, very narrowly circumscribes morality.
Yes.
G. Edward, do you have a website for your campaign?
www.gedwardcook.com.
As in letter G, Edward Cook, C-O-O-K?
Yes.
.com.
Yes, and also Radio Free America. It's a website I put together years ago to try and promote progressive radio. And, of course, when I opened the site, there were no radio stations to actually put down. There were a couple.
Yeah.
So now the directory is on there, and you're on there in Air America, and it's basically a link page. If you go to it, you can swing down and hit links of websites of basically talk show hosts.
That's great. GEdwardCook.com. G. Edward, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I got to boogie along. It's the time to pay the bills. Yeah, but I do appreciate it. Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman program. Yeah, that's me. 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Playing a new game.
And skipping and a hopping.
Laughing and a running. Hey, hey.
And laughing and a running.
Skipping and a jumping. In the misty morning fog with our hearts a thumping and you.
I just love Van Morrison's music. I got to tell you. I'm sorry. There you go. It's the old DJ in me coming out again. I'm sorry. It's 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Dave in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, we learned so much listening to your program. It's hard to stay on top of it all. I was just one thing we heard 2 or 3 weeks ago from you and nowhere else that I can recall was that the Defense Department had misplaced almost $9 billion. I thought, my God, have they checked their pockets?
Well, it's $9 billion in Iraq, $1 trillion altogether.
So I wondered if anybody has taken the time to try to follow that up at all. Have they checked their pockets?
Not to the best of my knowledge, no. It was all lost, as far as I know. Most of the money that was lost in the context of contracts to independent contractors, you know, Halliburton and,
yes,
and Bechtel.
Yes, yes. And I recall their only response was, like, it's tough to run a war and account for every every few bucks.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as Everett Dirksen said, you know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah.
It's apparently in the Pentagon's, in Don Rumsfeld's purview or point of view or whatever, perspective, it is not yet real money.
I wonder, though, maybe your professional team could try to follow up and see if anybody's had any way of accounting for that. They must have at least invented some excuse by now.
Well, we'll poke around, Dave.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 26 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Brian in Humboldt County, California on the line. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
A couple things. First of all, I wanted to thank you for your program. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, but your program is a public service, I feel. I was just checking out your website, and your chat room and forums, the number of enlightened people there is very heartening to see.
Yeah, it is to me, too. It's just amazing. I mean, we kind of built this community, and people come, and they hang out, and they're getting to know each other, and there's some really rational and civil conversations going on, and in fact, one of my better sources of news and information that I very frequently use in the radio program is stuff that people posted to our message board.
Yeah.
You know, people find the most amazing things and they say, hey, let me share this.
Yeah, my point is just that when you're talking about the national level and Social Security privatization, things like that, I'm sure many people know, but here in California, the Gropinator, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Herr Gropenführer.
Yeah, he's trying to dismantle our PERS retirement plan, which is one of the largest, biggest, bestest retirement plans in the country.
Right.
That actually does have some hold and sway over companies because of its clout. And he wants to dismantle that and throw that into 401ks. Out of a defined benefit to a defined contribution.
Right. Yeah, the problem is most people, if you say defined benefit or defined contribution, people don't have a clue what you're talking about. If you say they want to privatize your pension, then suddenly it starts to make sense. And in the corporate world, I mean, here IBM was doing this, and Bernie Sanders got involved, and he was holding town hall meetings and things, and they got IBM to back down here in Vermont on doing this. But this is the new fad, privatized pensions all across the country and the corporate world.
I've got a lot of years in, but the people coming behind me maybe get shoved into a lower form of retirement. And I tell you, we lag behind private sector about 25%. Part of the reason why people go and work for the state is for the retirement benefit.
Yeah, it's for the security.
Exactly, and if he goes through with his other ideas of 5 days of furlough and increase your health care and increase your contribution to retirement, it's about a 35% pay cut.
Yeah, and that is not unsubstantial or insignificant, let's say. Brian, thanks for the call, and thanks for raising an important topic.
Herr Gropenführer, we will do... Well, anyway, yeah, he's going to...
Can you imagine he called unions special interests, but corporations aren't? Amazing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's just so much in today's news. How do you know where to begin? It's just, again, from the Wall Street Journal. No, I am not paid by them. This is not an Armstrong Williams moment. I got to, you know, what can I say? I'm not finding this stuff in other places. Here's an article. Bubble heats up in housing markets. Study identifies regions most at risk for a tumble. An article by Jeff Updike. Homeowners in the hottest markets are facing a greater chance that the value of their houses will decline, according to a new study. They're calculating a 16.1% chance of an overall housing price decline in the top 50 metropolitan markets during the next 2 years. Gee, why might that be? Could it have something to do? I know the Wall Street Journal doesn't get into this kind of speculation, but I will. Could it have something to do with Alan Greenspan being so hyperactive about getting George W. elected finally as president of the United States as 2004 was coming along? And Greenspan, of course, knows that the impact of interest rates takes, you know, from the time you do something until the time you see something happen, takes a year or two, really, for there to be a significant consequence. It's sort of like a ship, you know, a giant ocean liner or something. You make a little tiny adjustment, and it takes a long time for that thing to start turning. And so Greenspan is like, you know, we've got to have a good economy in 2004 to get Georgie reelected. And so they cranked interest rates down to a rate that we hadn't seen since just after World War II. When we had, I think you could say certifiably, a bit of a fiscal crisis here in the United States. At least a debt problem. I mean, we borrowed a lot of money to finance that war. From ourselves, by and large, but nonetheless, people were encouraged to loan money to the government. That's when savings bonds started. And this whole thing, I remember when I was a kid in school in the 1950s, in elementary school, that they were still going, they would come to our class, and they had these little cards that you could put your quarters in and eventually save up enough to buy a savings bond, a $10 or $100, I think they were $10 savings bonds back then. I think today the smallest denomination you can get is 50 or maybe 100. But in any case, you get the savings bond, and everybody understood. We are loaning our money to the United States government. So now our government, in order to finance Bush's tax cuts for the rich, is borrowing money from China and Saudi Arabia and Japan. And South Korea. Don't you feel more secure? Article by Terry Cullen in today's... What is this? So this is also the Wall Street Journal. Holy cow. As fee increases hit holders of insurance for long-term care, is it safe to buy, is the question. Terry Cullen filling in for Jonathan Clements, writing a column. Is it safe to buy long-term care insurance yet? Now, just get this. I mean, the candor just astounds me. After years of a brutal industry consolidation, see, this is what happens when you don't have antitrust laws, when the Sherman Antitrust Act is suspended, when monopolies are allowed to form, when you have, you know, the Michael Milkins of the world, the mergers and acquisition specialists getting rich as companies get larger and larger so that they can gain economies of scale, so that they can lay off more and more people, and make it more and more difficult for small companies to enter the marketplace, to wipe out the possibility of people to entrepreneurially enter the American marketplace and live out the American dream, courtesy of Reaganomics, Bushonomics, and to some extent Clintonomics. Back to Terry Cullen's column. After years of brutal industry consolidation that has driven many players out of the market and led to sharply higher premiums, in some cases of as much as 40% in 1 year, the long-term care insurance market is finally showing signs of stabilizing. Unfortunately for consumers, those who have suffered most through the industry's growing pains are the ones who have held their policies the longest. Oh, those people who felt that they might need long-term care insurance, they're not the wealthy among us. You know, Bill Gates doesn't need long-term care. Eisner doesn't need long-term care. They can just, you know, hey, I need to be in a nursing home. Let me write you a check. But those among us who may feel that we need insurance for this stuff, well, we've had a bit of a rough time. Terry Cullen notes that one of the reasons why is because the insurance companies, and I quote, failed to predict the low interest rate environment of the past 7 years, which has cut into their interest income. Now here, I mean, they're just coming out and saying it. This is one of the major reasons why you are seeing these huge increases in premiums for example, malpractice, medical malpractice. Why? Because insurance companies invest their money. They're sitting on a pile of money. You pay into the, you know, typically you pay into insurance for years and years and years, and then eventually you need it or you don't. If it's car insurance, you hope you never need it. If it's life insurance, you hope you don't need it for a long, long time. I mean, I suppose any kind of insurance, you hope you don't need it for a long, long time or you never need it. And all that time you're paying into it, the insurance company's taking your money. What are they going to do with it? They have to invest it. I actually have a friend here in Vermont, in Montpelier, whose job was investing some of the Vermont National Life Insurance Company, which is the largest employer in this city outside of the state government, had. I mean, they're sitting on piles of money. They got to do something. What do you do with it? You don't just want to make 2% in the money market. So they put a fair amount of it. I'm not speaking of Vermont Life now. I just the insurance industry in general. They put a fair amount of it into the. Well, funny thing. The stock market tanked in 2001, largely. And so the insurance companies, the money that they had in the stock market, a lot of it got hit. So they lost huge quantities of money, the insurance industry as a whole. And so what do they do with the rest of the money? You know, well, they put it in bonds. Well, Greenspan, at the same time, is cranking down interest rates like absolute hysterical crazy so that he can try to pump the economy up a little bit so that by 2004 it'll still be gasping along so that George W. Bush can get himself elected. Now, no, it's no coincidence that right after the election, the rates started going back up again. It was absolutely predictable. I've been predicting it for a year and a half, 2 years. So, anyhow, the insurance companies are not making much money on their investments, so where are they going to get their money from? Somebody's got to pay the CEO's multimillion dollar salary. You and me is the answer. In fact, even right now, they quote Genworth's Mr. Stinson, Buck Stinson, president of the long-term care unit of General Electric's Genworth Financial in Richmond, Virginia. He says, the average price increase we're seeing in the industry right now is about 20%. 20% a year? Whoa, what happened? And then they tell a story. Terry Cullen, she tells a marvelous little story here. Jeff Baxter purchased a policy for his then 46-year-old wife, Annika, from Travelers Insurance Company in 1991. But this year, the couple was notified by Genworth, which acquired Travelers' LTC business in 2000, long-term care business. So here you have, see, this is the product of these mergers and acquisitions. They acquired they acquired Travelers' long-term care business in 2000. And so they notified Mr. Baxter that his wife's premium will increase 39%. Mr. Baxter says he feels betrayed. Gee, what a surprise. And not just for his wife's sake. No, it's Terry Cullen in today's Wall Street Journal. The Aiken, South Carolina resident sells long-term care insurance in his community. This is a guy who is the insurance salesman. They screwed the insurance salesman. Are you getting that? This guy is the guy. He says, now they quote him. I've always preached to people, buy it when you're young, but now the longer you've been holding the insurance, the higher your increase is likely to be, he says. And I'm the one who has to look these poor people in the face. The wonders of an absolutely unrestrained, unregulated, free market. Free to make lots of money. For the big multinationals, not at all free for small business to compete. Forget about competition. That's not the Republican way. That's the Democratic way. Sorry. Johnny K. Blue, John Kentucky Blue, I'm assuming that must be. On our message board, we have a section, Questions for Tom on Air. He says, I really want to see a total taxes paid by income chart. We need to get the rich to pay their share, all these hidden taxes. My cell phone bill, for example, keep us what they are. In other words, how much taxes are being paid. Somebody brought this up yesterday when I was filling in for Randy Rhodes on her Back It Down. I thought I had it in my drawer. I didn't. So I found it this morning. Molly Ivins on January 30th, 2003, wrote an op-ed piece for the Baltimore Sun, which is published on that date in commondreams.org. The title of it is Politicians for Sale - at Low Prices by Molly Ivins. So you can Google that and you can find it quite easily. And she talks, first of all, about how these companies invest a million, make a billion. Right. For example, she says the top corporations that paid zero taxes from 1996 to 1998, including AT&T, Bristol Myers Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, and Philip Morris, they paid zero taxes, gave $150.1 million to 2001. Public campaign reports they got $55 billion in tax breaks from 96 to 98 alone. Perennial legislation to gut the alternative minimum tax and billions in rebates to select corporations. So you invest a million, or in this case, $150 million, and you get back $55 billion. Hey, don't you wish you could do that? Invest $1,000, get back $100,000, or get back $5,500,000? That's essentially what they do. Well, they invest $150 million, so you invest $150, you get back $55,000. Not bad. I'd like to be able to do that. But I'm not a multinational corporation. So, anyhow, then Molly Ivins goes on to quote the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, the good old taxed. The income tax that they're paying, the sales tax that they're paying, the cigarette tax that they're paying, the property tax that they're paying, the excise taxes that they're paying, the payroll tax. And you look at they call them quintiles. A quint is what? Is it Greek or Latin for a fifth or for five? I don't frankly remember. But in any case, a quintile is a fifth. And so they divide the population into fifths. The bottom 20%, then the second quintile, the second 20%, the third quintile, the third 20%. The first 20% is like 0 to 20% of the nation's income. The second is from 20% to 40% of the nation's income. The third, rate of income. The third would be from 40 to 60%. The fourth would be from 60 to 80%. The fifth would be from 80 to 100%, or to the top, right? The poorest fifth, with an average income of $7,946, pays a cumulative tax rate of 18%. The richest fifth, of $116,660, now pays 19% in cumulative taxes. And that, of course, goes down under the Bush plan. Keep in mind, this was written just before the third Bush tax cut. The percentages for the three middle quintiles are 14, 16, and 17. So the highest tax rate is the top quintile, the richest fifth. They pay 19% of their total income in cumulative taxes. The second highest tax rate is if you make $7,946 a year, you pay 18%. Then the third highest would be the 60 to 80% quintile. They pay 17%. Then the next highest is the 40 to 60% quintile. They pay 16%. And then the 20 to 40% quintile pay 14%. Very straightforward. And Molly Ivins quoting the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So, there you go. Thank you for asking. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number. John in New England on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Tom, hi. About the $9 billion that went missing in Iraq.
Oh, you have a lead on it?
No, I don't. I'd like to. But, you know, I had a dream not too long ago. It was kind of weird, and this $9 billion, it was traced to offshore accounts held by close friends of GWB, Condoleezza Rice, and all the rest of the crew. But the amazing thing was that this country, our country, came to a complete standstill while people, like, fumed and furious about what had happened, and they were
That's
calling
the
for
dream
a trial.
Part. That's the dream part. I mean, the first part is just like, hey, common sense, John. The second part is the dream. Teapot Dome. Don't get me started, John.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Good one. Yes, there is some humor in this. 10 minutes before the hour, on the True People's Radio, Tom Hartman with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile. And everywhere I look, your eyes are fine.
And Teapot Dome. Welcome back, by the way. Teapot Dome. Teapot Dome, Wyoming. Yes, the home state of Dick Cheney. Speaking of Teapot Dome, Wyoming, back in 1912, as I recall, they found oil there. This would have been during the Taft administration, I believe. Anyway, in 1912, my recollection, they found oil there. And then during the Harding administration, which, again, as I recall, was in 21, but I might be mixing up my numbers. But anyhow, it was back in the 20s. In the Harding administration, the president appoints Albert Fall. Thus, perhaps the first... Maybe that's when the oil was found back in 1912 in the Taft administration. Taft said, okay, this oil is on federal land. Let's save this oil for the Navy. And so he gave administration of it over to the Department of the Navy. But Harding comes along, he appoints Albert Fall to be head of the Interior Department, and he says to the Navy, why don't you hand that oil reserve over to the Interior Department? After all, it is federal land, and we'll take good care of it. And so the Navy does, and Albert Fall decides that one of his good buddies with the Mammoth Oil Company, the guy whose name I've long since forgotten, and another guy with another oil company, which has lost in the mists of memory, you can Google this stuff, I'm sure, very easily, that these two friends of his should get the contract to pump the oil out of Teapot Dome. And one of them, or maybe both of them, in exchange, decide to make a $100,000 loan to Albert Fall. And word starts traveling around Washington, D.C. Hey, this Fall guy, he is supposed to be a civil servant. I mean, he's just the Secretary of Treasury, or of the Interior, rather. Now, this was back before they hired multimillionaires like Jon Snow and you know, on and on the list goes, right, to be cabinet secretaries. It was considered public service. They said, this Albert Fall guy, he's spending money like he's a little wealthier than his salary might indicate. And so the newspapers began an investigation, and word came out Albert Fall was where had he got his money from? He got it from these two oil guys. And the two oil guys, of course, were pumping the oil as fast as they could. Sort of like, you know, you just plug in Halliburton and Iraq and no meters on the pumps anymore. And where's the oil going? And how can we keep track? Well, we can't. And how's it? And how did Halliburton get into this anyway? And it turns out that, yes, Dick Cheney was involved. He was kept in the loop. And Stephen Hadley was involved in signing off on memos. All this, it's a virtual repeat, except for the fact that this time, the newspapers aren't investigating it. Nobody's talking about it as a scandal. Nobody's going to look into it unless the Democrats take the House or Senate. And as long as the Republicans own all the voting machines and all the newspapers, and as long as General Electric owns NBC, so MSNBC has the rule that whenever you have a liberal on Chris Matthews' program or any other, you have to have two conservatives. And it's not just there. I mean, it's all over. Just start adding up who's showing up on Face the Nation, Meet the Press. It ain't going to change unless we start speaking out, unless we start getting politically active, unless we stand up and say, no, we would like to have some integrity in our voting process. We would like to see some integrity in our public servants. And let's make Dick Cheney a Fall guy in the truest tradition of the word. Thanks for being with us today.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.